सुबह सो तुझे इसको खांदा सुता नो खांदा मीन्स एग्रीगेट बट आई थिंक हियर खांदा मीन्स द बॉडी. दिस सुधा इज प्रोटेक्शन फॉर द बॉडी अगेंस्ट स्नेक्स एंड अदर क्रीचर्स. That is why it is called Khanda Sutta. The Sutta is described as like the medicine of a divine mantra, and it is described as destroying the terrible venom of all poisonous creatures. So this soda is said to be like the medicine of divine mantra. So mantra are some magical texts or sayings that people use in witchcraft or some other thing, and that are believed to have the power to cure diseases and others. If the mantra made by human beings has power, then the mantra made by deities must have more power. So this sutta is described as like the medicine of a divine mantra. So it is a divine medicine for, say, snake bites and others. And it is said that this sutra destroys all other dangers as well. So it is not for protection against snake bites and others only, but it's for protection against all dangers. This sutta or protection was taught by the Buddha when he was living at Sawatthi. While he was living there, a monk was bitten by a snake and died. So when it was reported to the Buddha, he said, "Monks, that monk must have not practiced loving kindness towards all species of snakes. If he had practiced loving kindness towards these species of snakes, he would not have died of snake bite." And then Buddha said, "I allow you to, I allow you monks to have protection for your safety and for your welfare." And then Buddha taught this sutta to the monks. In this connection, Buddha also related his past life when he was reborn as when he was a hermit, and he had many pupils or followers with him. And one day, one of the hermits was bitten by a snake and died. And then he said, "That hermit must not have practice loving kindness towards these four species of snakes," and so on. And so he, it is said that he taught the same protection to his follower hermits. Although this sutta is protection against snakes and other like animals, it does not advocate killing or destroying these creatures. In fact, It is a soda which instructs us to practice loving kindness towards these creatures. First, Buddha taught how to practice loving kindness towards these species of snakes. Here, Buddha said, "May there be love between me and the Virupakkhas." Now, Virupakkhas are a species of nagas. When we say naga, we mean two things: the ordinary snakes, and also, I don't know how to call them, divine snakes or something, because it is believed that these divine nagas have their own power, and they can assume human forms and so on, and they enjoy their life as deities, and they live in the earth and in the waters. So when we say nagas, we mean both these divine nagas and the ordinary snakes. So in this verse, Buddha mentioned four species of nagas. The first is Virupakkha, the second Irapatha, the third Sabhyaputta, and then fourth Kantna Gautamaka. Yeah, so there are four great families of these nagas. So the first is Virupakkha, the second Irapatha, the third Sabhyaputta, and the fourth Tanha Gautamaka. So in this verse, Buddha taught monks to practice loving kindness, saying, "May there be love between me and the Virupakkhas, may there be love between me and the Irapathas, may there be love between me and the Chabhyabuddhas, may there be love between me and the Tanha Gautamakas." Now, when we say, "May there be love between me and the Virupakkhas," and so on, we mean that we are friendly towards those, let us call them nagas. We are friendly towards those nagas, and we have loving kindness for those nagas. If we do not have loving kindness for those nagas, we cannot say, "May there be love between me and those nagas." So, although it is not a usual form of practicing loving kindness, usual form of sending thoughts of loving kindness, it is actually a practice of loving kindness towards those naga families. So by this first verse, Buddha taught big monks to practice loving kindness towards these all nagas, including nagas and snakes. And when the monks practice loving kindness towards them, or send thoughts of love towards these creatures, these creatures maybe they become harmless, or they become friendly towards monks who practice loving kindness towards them. Now, I think it is possible that the loving kindness practiced by, say, us can affect the other beings. I think you are all familiar with the rays of the Buddha. It is said that rays came out of the Buddha when he was reflecting on the seventh book of Abhidhamma. Now, the rays are caused by, first, by his mind. So when his mind was clear and peaceful and happy, then the mind causes some material properties to arise in the body. And those material properties in their turn causes some other material properties to arise. And like a chain reaction, these material properties or vibrations reach to the end of the world. So in the same way, when we practice loving kindness towards these creatures, first, there is the thought of loving kindness in our minds. And these thoughts of loving kindness produce some material properties in our bodies, and then they produce other kinds of material properties, which we may call vibrations. So these vibrations of metta reach them and have effect on them, and so they may be friendly towards us, or at least they may not do harm towards us. So that is possible. And so Buddha urged his monks, his disciples, to practice loving kindness towards these nagas instead of killing them or destroying them. This practice of loving kindness towards these creatures, especially nagas, was practiced during the time of the Buddha, and it has come down to the present day. And so, especially monks makes this protection for monks, chants this paritta or sutta every day. And when we have chanted this, we get a kind of comfort, a kind of sense of security, sense of safety. Although actually we are not sure that we may not be bitten by snakes, but once we make this a protection, we feel safe. And now, before we move to the to Half Moon Bay place, there was no path between two houses, and so there were all bushes and grass, and there were many snakes, they said. When we moved there, we chant this order every day, and now there is a path between two houses, and we do chanting when we walk to the house or breakfast in the morning. It was still dark in the morning. We used flashlights, but it is still not enough. And so when we walk, all three months, we chant this soda when we go to breakfast. So we may or may not be bitten by snakes, but when we do chanting and go, we have a sense of safety. And so we are not afraid of seeing snakes. And I have never seen a snake there, although there are snakes there, and the other people have seen some of them. So by doing this chanting, by doing this protection, we get a sense of safety. So Buddha's protection against snakes and others is by generating love between us and these nagas. And then next Buddha said another kind of practicing loving kindness. He said, may there be love between me and creatures without feet. So here, not only snakes but other creatures are included. May there be love between me and creatures with 2 feet. May there be love between me and creatures with 4 feet. And may there be love between me and creatures with many feet. So that means it includes all creatures. And creatures without feet means snakes and fishes. And creatures with 2 feet, human beings, birds, and deities. With four feet, it's obvious, And then with many feet, like spiders, scorpions, centipedes, and so on. So this is also generating love between us and these creatures. So these creatures may be touched by the middle and vibrations we send towards them, and so they may not have desire to harm us. Then Buddha taught monks another way of generating love. And here Buddha said, may creatures without feet not harm me. May creatures with 2 feet not harm me, 4 feet not harm me, and may creatures with many feet not harm me. So here, the generating loving kindness is by way of wishing or by way of request. So may creatures without feet not harm me. When we say this, we have love for those creatures. Because if we do not have love for those creatures, we will not say, may they not harm me. So the fact that we say, may they not harm me, shows that we have love for these creatures. So this is this comes to be known as another way of practicing loving kindness towards those creatures. Next, Buddha taught practicing metta to all creatures. Now, up to now, there are three verses, and these three verses, with these three verses, Buddha taught us to practice loving kindness to specified beings, like to snake families and to creatures without feet, with 2 feet, and so on. Next, Buddha taught to practice loving kindness towards all beings. So in this verse, Buddha said, all creatures, all beings that breathe, and all beings that have been born, may they all, without exception, see what is good. May not any suffering come to any being. So this is another way of practicing loving kindness towards all beings. So now we know that we can practice loving kindness in many ways. Sometimes we may send thoughts straight to the beings, and sometimes we may make a wish, but at the same time we are sending thoughts to them. And we may send thoughts, loving kindness thoughts, to specified beings because this yoga is specifically for protection against nagas or snakes and others. And also we practice loving kindness towards all beings. Next, Buddha Lord gave us another way of making protection. And here it is just a saying, immeasurable is the Buddha, immeasurable is the Dhamma, immeasurable is the Sangha. Limited or measured are creeping things, namely snakes, scorpions, centipedes, spiders, lizards, mice, and others. Now, when we say immeasurable is the Buddha, we mean the Buddha's qualities, Buddha's good qualities are immeasurable. Now, it is said that even a Buddha doing nothing but saying the qualities of another Buddha all through his life cannot exhaust the qualities of that other Buddha. So the Buddha's virtues or qualities are inexhaustible. There is a Dhamma. Now the Dhamma means four paths, four fruitions, and Nibbana. So the Dhamma is deep, profound, difficult to see, And Dharma has also many attributes or many good qualities. And immeasurable is the Sangha. The Sangha is also immeasurable because Sangha possesses the Dharma which is immeasurable. So the Buddha, the Dharma and Sangha are immeasurable, and we see this again and again, dwelling on the qualities of the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha. Another meaning explained here is that the Buddha is without measuring standard. Dharma and Sangha are without measuring standard. Now, if you want to measure something, we use a ruler or something. And with the ruler, say we measure things and say it is, say, 5 inches long or 6 inches long. Now, the attachment, hate, delusion, and other mental defilements, they are called measuring things, because by the occurrence of greed, hate, and delusion, we measure beings, or we measure persons, or we estimate. Suppose we see a person seem to be very calm and peaceful and very kind, and we may think that he is an arahant. That is, so long as we do not see any mental defilement in him, so long as we do not see greed or hate or delusion in him. But when we see, say, greed in him, now we know that he's not an arahant. So we, by seeing the occurrence of greed in him, we measure him that, oh, he is just this much and not an arahant or something like that. So, according to that explanation, then Buddhas are immeasurable. Buddha is immeasurable because Buddha has no greed, hate, and delusion and other mental refinements with which he could be measured. The Dharma, there are no mental defilements in the Dharma, and the Sangha, the noble Sangha, is free from mental defilements. And so the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha are said to be immeasurable or measureless. Snakes and other creatures have no noble qualities, and so they are not immeasurable. And also these creatures have mental defilements, and so they can be measured. So by stating that Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha are immeasurable, and the other creatures are measurable, we are something like invoking the power of the Buddha, the Dhamma, and Sangha to protect us from snakes and other creatures. So this came to be known as a protection. Actually, Buddha stated that it is a protection, it is a safeguard. In the next verse, Buddha taught monks to say, a protection has been made by me, a safeguard has been made by me, let all the creatures withdraw. So this is a kind of protection that is saying immeasurable is the Buddha and so on. And then let all creatures withdraw, let all creatures go away. And then Buddha ended the paritta with paying homage to the Buddhas. So the last two lines say, I pay homage to the Buddha, I pay homage to the seven fully enlightened ones. Now, there were Buddhas in the past, many, many Buddhas in the past, but the seven were most remembered and so the most popular. And so here, Bharata to pay homage to the seven fully enlightened one, including himself. Okay, by reciting this sutta again and again, and by seriously practicing loving kindness towards these creatures, I believe that we will be protected from these poisonous creatures, and we will not have any enmity between us and these creatures. Okay, you may want to ask, will I rely on this Bharata only when I'm bitten by a snake? Although I may seek help from snake bite kit or something, the first thing I will do is remember this soda and say it again and again and practice loving kindness towards this creature. That is the first thing I will do. But in addition, I will seek help from other sources as well. So Buddha's solution of this problem is through loving kindness and not through hate, not through killing, not through destroying. Now Buddha taught loving kindness in this sutta and the previous sutta, which is the real loving kindness sutta. Now, sometimes we underestimate the value and importance of the practice of loving kindness. Because it is samatha meditation, and so we are attached to vipassana meditation, and so sometimes we may belittle the importance of loving kindness meditation. But Buddha did not. Now Buddha had praise for the practice of loving kindness, and Buddha urged his disciples to practice loving kindness meditation. And loving kindness meditation is one of the four things that are called protection for monks. So monks are instructed to practice four kinds of meditations every day. The first is recollection of the virtues or qualities of the Buddha, and the second is loving kindness, and the third is reflection on the foulness of the body, and the fourth is reflection on death. So monks are expected to practice these four meditations every day. The first one is for devotion and for getting joy through the recollection of the Buddha's good qualities. And the second is love for protection and also for peacefulness for ourselves. And the third is to avoid attachment to our bodies, and the fourth is to avoid attachment to life. So among these four, metta or loving kindness is one. So we should practice loving kindness every day, not just once in a while. Buddha said in one discourse, monks, if for just the time of a finger snap, a monk produces a thought of loving kindness, develops it, gives attention to it, such a one is rightly called a monk. He is not devoid of jhana. He acts in accordance with the master's teachings. He follows his advice and eats deservingly the country's armed food. Remember all? Now, how long is the time of a finger snap? one second, right? So let's say one second, like this. So Buddha said, just for one second, a monk produces a thought of loving kindness. If you practice just one second, loving kindness meditation, and Buddha said, he is the one who is rightly called a monk, and he is not devoid of jhana. That means if he practices jhana repeatedly, I mean, if he practices loving kindness repeatedly, he can attain jhana. And he is the one who acts in accordance with the teachings of his teacher, who follows his the teacher's advice. And also he is the one who eats deservingly the country's food. Now, okay. Now, when monks eat, they are instructed to eat making reflection on food. Now, if they are practicing vipassana like you do here, they must eat with mindfulness. But at other times, when they eat, they are instructed to eat with reflection. That means, I eat this food not for making merriment, not for taking pride in my body or in my strength and so on. I eat this food just to enable me to follow the teachings of the Buddha and to practice the Dhamma. So monks must make reflections every time they make use of the four requisites. Food, clothing, dwelling place, and medicine. If they do not do reflection and make use of these four requisites, they are said to be in debt. So they are using something without paying anything, and so they are said to be in debt. But here Buddha said, if just for a second a monk practices loving kindness, then he eats deservingly the country's armed food. That means he does not eat with debt. So he is free from that offense, even if he does not make reflection during eating. In another discourse, Buddha said, for 7 years I cultivated thought of loving kindness. Having cultivated a heart full of loving kindness for 7 years, I did not return to this world for 7 world cycles. And 36 times I was Sakka, the ruler of God, and many hundred times I was a world ruling king. So in this Sutta, Buddha stated the benefits he got from the practice of cultivation of loving kindness. He practiced for 7 years, he said, and then for 7 world cycles, he did not return to this world. That means he did not, he was not reborn as a human being or a deva for 7 world cycles. Because as a result of loving kindness meditation, he was reborn in the world of Brahmas. And then when he came down to the world of deities and human beings, then he was Sakka, the ruler of God for 36 times, and then he was a world ruling king for many hundred times. So these benefits he got from the practice of loving kindness for 7 years. No. Loving kindness is mostly described as a mental development to be practiced mentally. So when we practice loving kindness, although we may say aloud, we are doing the mental development, we may all be in well, happy and peaceful. But loving kindness can be expressed in actions, in deeds also. And Buddha instructed his disciples to set up with their bodily action and with their verbal action towards each other and towards all beings. So loving kindness can be practiced mainly in mind, but it can be expressed in bodily action and verbal action also. So when you, let's say, when you're driving and you give a right of way to another car, then you are expressing loving kindness by bodily action. Now, the yogi who said there, he opens the door for us every time we got out of the hall. That's also an expression of loving kindness. So you can express loving kindness in many ways. You help someone to carry something, or sometimes you pick up something which others have thrown, or you put things back to their places neatly, and so on. There are many things you can show loving kindness through body actions, not saying a word. And also you can show loving kindness by word of mouth, like talking to people kindly and telling them what's beneficial to them, and also talking about what is good, talking of what is good about them when they are not there or on their back, because talking about something good about talking good about something in front of him may seem cheap praise. So you can express by word of mouth loving kindness by saying something good about some person when he's not there, and you can talk to people gently with kindness. And so there are many, many things, many acts both of body and of speech by which you can, or by which we can, express loving kindness. And if we keep it in mind and try to express loving kindness in all our activities, we will live in perfect harmony, and we will live in happiness. So we should not underestimate the value of loving kindness, meditation, and we should practice it every day. Okay, about the practice. So for 2 days I told you about the practice, and day before yesterday I told you about the basic requirements, two basic requirements for the practice of foundations of mindfulness. Now today I'd like to tell you 6 things to avoid when you practice mindfulness, foundations of mindfulness. Buddha said, without giving up 6 things, O monks, will it not be possible to dwell practicing body contemplation on the body, feeling contemplation on feeling, mind contemplation on mind on the mind, and mind object contemplation on mind objects, which are these 6? And then Buddha enumerated the 6 things. Now the first thing to avoid is fondness for activity. So when you are on a retreat like this, do not want to do many things. Do not do anything that is not related to practice. So because if you do activities here and there, if you are fond of doing things like repair and others, then you will lose time for meditation. You will not get as much time as possible for the practice of meditation. So when you are practicing foundations of mindfulness or vipassana meditation, especially at a retreat like this, be not fond of activity. So just do what is required of you as a yogi, that is to practice meditation and to practice mindfulness all the time. The second thing to avoid is fondness for talking. Talking is very distracting, and talking dissipates energy. And talking can be detrimental to concentration. So concentration you have built for so many days can be ruined by talking. So it is important that talking should be kept to the minimum, that is, talking only when it is absolutely necessary. Otherwise, you are not to talk, but keep silent and practice mindfulness. In order to avoid talking, yogis observe noble silence here. And noble silence really means getting into jhana and also practice of meditation. But here noble silence is made to mean keeping silent as much as is possible and talking only when it is absolutely necessary. So by not talking, if it is not absolutely necessary, you are hurting yourself as well as the other yogis. So if you do not talk, you are not distracted. And if you do not talk to other yogi, the other yogi is not distracted. So when in a retreat, we want to avoid distraction as much as possible. Third thing to avoid is fondness for sleeping. So when you're practicing Satipatthana meditation, you sleep just enough for you, for your health. And it is considered that 4 hours in 4 hours sleep a night is enough for your health. And nowadays people are taught that if they don't sleep 8 hours or 10 hours, their health will suffer. So people are afraid, and if they are told that they have to sleep only 4 hours, they are scared. But actually, sleeping 4 hours is enough, and many yogis have slept for only 4 hours and practiced meditation for a long time, and they didn't suffer any loss of health. So sleeping should be also kept to the minimum, so that you get more time for practice of meditation. At our retreat, yogis get to sleep about more than 6 hours. So I think it is enough. And if you think it is not enough, be patient with it, and you will get to sleep more when you go back home. So at the retreat, sleep as little as you can, and devote your time to the practice of meditation. The fourth thing to avoid is fondness for company. Now you are practicing here with many people, but each one of you is going your own way, and you are alone on your spiritual path. So, and you come here not to socialize. So although you are practicing with many people here, you are not said to be fond of company. So if you do not socialize, and if you go your own way, and you are abiding and following your company, even though you are practicing with many people at one place. The fifth thing to avoid is lack of sense control. So our senses must be controlled when we practice Satipatthana meditation. Now, control of senses really means not letting unwholesome states arise in these senses or through these through the six senses. So when we see something, we try to avoid unwholesome states from arising. When we hear something, the same thing. And so sense control means not letting unwholesome thoughts arise through the senses. And also sense control means keeping your senses, eyes, ears and so on controlled, not looking up and not looking here and there, not listening to radios and others. So that is also sense control. Now here at the retreat, most of the time you have to be meditating, and so I think there is complete sense control here. The sixth thing to avoid is immoderate eating. That means eating too much. When you are at the retreat, you do not do any physical work, and so you do not need much physical energy. So you do not need much food. But you practice immoderate eating here by keeping 8 pieces or by keeping 1 meal a day. And I think it is very good for your health as well as for the practice of meditation. Now if you eat to the full, even though if you do not eat too much, but if you eat to the full, you don't feel comfortable. So it is good to eat a little less than full. And Venerable Sariputta advised his monks to drink water instead of taking the last 4 or 5 handfuls. I think moderate eating is very, very good to health as well as to the practice of meditation. At home at my monastery, maybe I ate to the full. But here, I ate less and I feel better. So I was thinking of eating less when I go back home. But these are the six things to avoid when practicing Satipatthana meditation taught by the Buddha. Now I want to add one more thing. That is, avoid doing anything that will distract other yogis. And also to be understanding and not to get upset if somebody that's something which is distracting for you, because everybody here knows that they are not to disturb other yogis, and even if they make noise, they make noise because it is inevitable. Now sometimes you cough or you sneeze, and that you cannot control. You cannot avoid. If when you want to sneeze, you will sneeze, and when you want to cough, you will cough. So when somebody sneezes or coughs, please understand that because he or she does it because it is unavoidable. So when you are practicing meditation, the state of mind is very important. Sometimes just a little example thing can set you on a trip of anger, and then you ruin your meditation. So try not to do anything to which is distracting to others, and also if somebody does something which is distracting, please be forgiving, and please understand that he or she does it because it is unavoidable. So if you keep your mind that way, then you will find that you are able to get into meditation quickly, and you get mindfulness and concentration. So the distraction is the one to be avoided when you are practicing Vipassana meditation at a retreat like this.
Nó là sáu cái sự mà quý vị cần phải từ bỏ khi quý vị không được có tiền, không được có tiền. Tôi xin đưa thêm vào hai cái nữa là quý vị cố gắng đừng có làm không tâm những cái người bạn thiền sư của mình, đừng có làm bất cứ cái gì mà làm cho họ không tâm. Và cái thứ hai là người ta làm cái gì mà làm về quý vị phóng tâm thì quý vị đừng có bực bội, hãy thông cảm và tha thứ. Chẳng hạn như người ta hết tiền hay là người ta ho thì những cái đó người ta không muốn, người ta làm thì người ta không thể không làm được, cơ thể nó đòi hỏi như vậy thì người ta không có thể giảm được người ta làm. Nếu mà những cái đó làm quý vị phóng tâm thì quý vị đừng có một mình, thì cái niệm đọc nó rất là tế nhẹ. Chỉ cần nhiều khi cái tâm mình nó sanh khởi một cái niệm sân hận thì nó cũng làm hư hại đi cái công trình niệm đọc của mình, mất cái tiến bộ. Nếu là quý vị ở trong những cái trường hợp đó thì điều hay là quý vị nên thông cảm, xong rồi tha thứ luôn, thì cái tâm mình nó dịu, nó không có trở ngại. Thì nếu mà quý vị theo sáu cái điều từ bỏ kẻ trên cũng như hai
okay. We practice loving kindness towards all beings, and we practice vipassana as long as we are here, and we'll carry on this practice when we leave this place. So by adhering to the practice of vipassana meditation, we will be able to reach our destination in this very life.
Yeah.